Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler, and I'm so happy that you've joined us. Our mission is to provide stories and resources that will give you inspiration to explore all of the possibilities that your life can be. The possibilities are limitless, and guess what? So are you. It begins with believing. Believing in yourself, believing that the future is yours to write, believing that you can not only write your desired future, but that you have everything that you need to write it, edit it as needed, and fully and wonderfully live it. And you don't have to wait. You can start today. The pen truly is in your hand. I cannot wait to share this week's conversation with you. Today is an author, coach, and founder of the Family Enrichment Academy. He has been married for 40 years. He has 6 children, as well as 13 grandchildren. His background as a family enrichment coach and his life experience provide a unique perspective on parenthood. His book, How to Be the Parent Your Teenager Needs You to Be, is his second book on parenting. Now, while this conversation is focused on parenting, I could not help but notice all the connections to broader leadership. And many times in the conversation, I found myself thinking, wow, I wish some of my former managers had heard this conversation. With that in mind, it is now time to meet my guest, Jim White. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it. Excited to be here.
Thank you. I'll tell you what, why don't we just dive right in? And can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your whole journey relative to what your passion is?
Sure. I'll just take a few minutes, give you a little bit of the backstory, if you will. So I have spent the last 40 years, I'd like to say I'm a student of personal development, marriage, and parenting. But probably more importantly, I've been living my life and applying the lessons learned over the last 40 years as a husband and a parent to 6 children. So yeah, my wife and I, we've been together for a long time and lots of kids running around. I use the analogy, I'm like the hero's two journeys. So if your audience isn't familiar with that idea, it's a storytelling technique, actually. And the premise is that in any great story, the hero or the main character is on 2 different journeys. The first journey is they have a goal to accomplish or a task that they're trying to accomplish. And this is known as the outside journey or the journey of accomplishment. But they're also on a second journey, which is known as the journey of fulfillment. And what's happening is as they're pursuing that outside goal, they're also discovering new principles, values, and beliefs to live by, right? They're becoming a better person in some way. And it just makes their life work better. And so how this is connected to me and my journey as a parent is when I look back and you think about having 6 children, we had lots of tasks to accomplish, right? There was lots of outside goals. There were, you know, places to be, meals to cook, homework to help with. And we dealt with our share of obstacles along the way as well. But all the while I was doing the stuff that a father of 6 would do, I was also going through this amazing internal transformation. And it was through my interest in personal development, parenting, and marriage, I was just discovering principles, values, and beliefs that made our family work better. And actually, about 20 years ago, I wrote, it's almost like a vision statement, you know, this definition of a successful family, you know, and it's one that, you know, whether we speak with respect, we honor differences, we provide a nurturing environment, we have the ability to effectively deal with any difficult issues that come our way. And then it sort of wrapped up with the key line was, and there was a sense of peace, joy, warmth, and love within the home. Now, you know, our family doesn't always look like that, but we do more often than not. And what's happened is more important is if we get, you know, if a circumstance pops up or something happens that kind of throws us off track, I now have a really good idea of how to bring us back. And again, it's through that sort of internal transformation. And so where I find myself now is our children are grown and gone for the most part. Our youngest child is in college now. And it's interesting. I've just felt this calling to share some of the wisdom learned or gained over the last 40 years. And so I formed the Family Enrichment Academy as a vehicle to fulfill that calling. Now, I've put together a book. I have a book that's called How to Be the Parent Your Teenager Needs You to Be. That's part of this calling as well. And then within the Family Enrichment Academy, I do one-on-one coaching and workshops and just provide content, all with the purpose of supporting parents, as I like to say, as they move along their journey as a parent. And So that's how I got here. It's just it's a long, you know, many, many years of working as a parent, and now just find myself in a position where I want to share the wisdom gained.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the hero's journey too, because I think it's a path I think a lot of us have been on, you know, where we learn Absolutely. Things for ourselves. And so I love that. So you said something there, you said a lot of stuff there too that I want to explore. But one of the things you said was sometimes, you didn't say it this way, but things can go a little haywire.
Right.
Now you know how to get it back on track. What are some of your, I guess, go-tos to get things back on track when it does go a little haywire? Because life happens.
Right, exactly. And actually, part of what I like to describe to parents and to people that I work with is that we all have within us two competing mindsets. And one of those mindsets is fear-based, and the other one is love-based. And what happens is when something, let's say a circumstance pops up in life, and it could be a big thing. You know, let's say, you know, it's the death of an uncle or an aunt, or it could just be one of your kids comes home with a bad grade on a test, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever the circumstance is, it's sort of like in that moment, the question is, where are you coming from? Are you coming from more of a fearful mindset or more of a love-based mindset? And the overall theme that I like to share with parents is the more when you respond out of fear, it tends to be destructive, and it's also a place where you're going to experience more pain and suffering. Whereas if when you respond from a love-based mindset, it's going to have healing attributes, things, it's going to heal the situation or the relationship, and you'll experience more peace, joy, and purpose. And so one of the big fundamental messages is to be aware of where you're coming from and try to be intentional about choosing love. You know, sometimes people will say, well, I love my children. Well, we all love our children, but we don't always act out of that love. And so part of it is to be intentional about choosing, where am I coming from? And unfortunately, for a lot of people, what happens is that fearful mindset becomes the default, if you will. Yeah. That's where they end up 9 times out of 10. And you almost have to be very intentional about trying to shift it. So that's one place where we start. Is okay, are we being love-based and love-centered? And once you look at a particular circumstance from that perspective, then the question, okay, what can I do now out of that, you know, when I act out of love?
Yeah.
So that's a high-level overview.
Yeah. That's really powerful, though, the whole where am I coming from, love versus fear. And I think you're right. I think a lot of people are kind of stuck in that more the fear-based come from. When people are stuck there, so let's say that they have that awareness, like, oh my goodness, I'm coming from a place of fear. What can they do to shift to more of that love?
Yeah. So there's two pieces. One of it is in the moment, and we'll start there. So let's something happens. And so in the moment, and I always encourage people to think about what are they experiencing? If you're experiencing frustration, anger, disappointment, any of those kinds of emotions or feelings, if you will, that's a signal that you're fear-based. And so that's the first question is, what am I experiencing? So let's say you notice, okay, I'm frustrated right now. So the first step is to try to create a pause. And well, it starts with awareness. You be aware I'm there. Then you try to create a little bit of a pause. And then in that pause, actually one of the simple techniques I share within the book, I have three questions you can ask. And one of the first question is, you know, in the circumstance, who do I need to forgive or what do I need to forgive? And so you ask in that pause, you ask that question. Then the next question is, what am I grateful for? So you're now asking, okay, where can I put some gratitude into this situation, or what is there to be grateful for? And then the third question is, you know, once you've sort of made that shift, is how can I make a difference? And so those are three questions that are pretty simple that you can ask yourself in that moment to try to create that shift and be more love-centered, and then how can I act out of that love-centered? So that's a simple approach that you can take. But you have to be aware first. You have to catch yourself in the moment. You know, that's the key.
That's right. Nothing happens without awareness.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And then the second thing that you talked about there was the pause. That is so important because what was it? Stephen Covey talked about that's where we get to choose our reaction or our response. Yeah, I love that. And I love the questions too. Those are so practical that someone can say, okay, you know, what can I ask to help make that shift? So I appreciate that.
Right.
I'm thinking about now the one of the things on that I read of yours is letting go of your need to control your teenager is the greatest gift that you can give them. And I'm wondering now if that is attached to this whole fear versus love.
It absolutely is. It's connected. And there's a natural transition that happens as we parent. If you think about, you know, there's seasons of parenting, you know, we have seasons of life, but there's seasons of parenting as well. You know, when you have that newborn, you're fully in charge of everything, right? And then as that child grows a little bit, now they're at elementary school, you can see how there's a, you know, you still are in control of what goes on, but they have a little bit more independence at that point, but they're still, the parent is 90% in control of what's going on. And part of my message to parents with teenagers is that's when you really have to start shifting away from trying to control everything. And a lot of times it is fear-based because the parent is worried that the teenager is going to make a bad choice, right? You send them out with their friends on a Saturday night and you wonder what they're going to do or what decisions or, you know, choices they're going to make. And so it's fear-based. And to be quite honest, the risks are greater for your teenager than they were for your younger child when you think about it, right? I mean, if they're out and they start drinking or they're driving, they're at the age where they can drive. I mean, they can hurt somebody or they can, you know, hurt. It's just a much higher risk. And that's why that fear gets ramped up. And a lot of times the conflict between the parent and the child is because the parent's trying to control everything that's going on. And the natural process for your teen is to want to regain some independence. And so what I find with parents a lot of times is one of the reasons they control so much is because they don't know what else to do. You know, there's this thought of, okay, what's my option? Do I just say, you know, hands off, let them go do whatever they want? And that's where I like to introduce the idea of empowerment. The premise is you let go of the need to control and you transition to more of an empowerment approach. It's how do I empower my teenager to make the right choice, or how do I empower them to be their absolute best? And it's a different, again, it's a mindset, and there's some different skills there. And that's, again, where, you know, when I coach and work with people, it's about, okay, let's think about the different strategies and skills that you need to empower your teenager, as opposed to trying to control everything that happens. And so, and one of them is being more love-based, because again, that control is, it's a fearful thing. So you got to be willing to let go of that a little bit.
Yeah. And it is fear-based. And also, you know, you said the need for control. And I heard someone else say it this way one time, control is an illusion. We never have control.
Right.
We don't fully have control. So I can imagine, though, that some of the parents you work with are like, how in the world do I let go of some of that control? Because that's got to be tough for them. So how do you help them with that?
Yeah, it is. And part of it is setting the long-term objective. It's okay, you know, at some point your child is going to be 25 years old, right? And when they're 25 years old, you want them to be able to be responsible, make responsible choices, take care of themselves, be independent, I like the two of my favorite words are resourceful. You want your child to be resourceful. You want them to be resilient, right? You want them to be able to deal with things. And if we have that as the goal down the road, the idea is when they're teens, this is the training ground. You got to, you know, this is the opportunity for the parent to help bring them along and help them to develop those skills. When I say them, the child, so that when they do launch off on their own, they're in a much better position to be, you know, be successful as adults. And then the other piece of it, when we really look at what parents want for their children, is they want them to be happy, right? That's what you, even when you really dig down underneath, I want them to be happy. I want them to experience some peace and joy and purpose in their life. And that then circles back to the whole idea of being love-based and teaching your child to be love-based as well. So it's not just about the parent being love-based, but if we can start to model that and, you know, teach the child to be love-based, that puts them in a position to where when they're 25, 30, 40 years old, they will have a more successful life from the standpoint of feeling, you know, peace, joy, and happiness in their life as well.
Yeah.
So You know, that's so some of it starts with setting the context. You know, what is it that we're trying to accomplish? And then it's just a matter of taking situations and circumstances and just starting to practice with it. And sometimes it goes well and the parent, you know, has success, and sometimes they don't. That's just part of the process. It's a learning process. And that's why I like to refer back to the idea of it being a journey. You know, it is an ongoing journey, and it's an ongoing process, and you have to adopt a growth mindset and just continue to work and develop.
Yeah, because it is a journey.
Absolutely.
Right? You said something there too, Jim, about being resourceful, that the kids are resourceful. It reminds me of way back in the day. I was a teenager myself when I started, but I was a manager at Wendy's and then a McDonald's. So there I am. I'm basically a teenager, you know, early 20s, whatever. I'm managing basically all teenagers. And I was always criticized by other managers because they said, you trust your employees so much. And you give them so much responsibility. And my response was always, but I was a responsible kid.
Right.
You know, and I think that when I trusted them that much, it was seldom that one of them really let me down. I mean, in any sort of big way. You know, sometimes I'd get talking too much, you know, whatever.
Right,
but that
right.
happens. And then I did leadership work for high school students. This was 10 years ago or more. And I always treated them as, you are resourceful. You are like, I don't have to be at the front of the room, you know, pointing my finger at you. We're on this journey together. And I found that, you know, sometimes I had 80 to 100 kids in the room with me, and most of them responded very well to that. Is that what you kind of found?
Absolutely. I think, you know, from a parent's perspective, it's sort of your expectation.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about setting an expectation. Mm-hmm. And the other interesting thing that's sort of underneath what you're talking about, and again, when you look at being fear-based versus love-based, there's sort of underlying beliefs that reside in both of those mindsets. And if you come from a fearful mindset, the underlying belief is that people in general are fundamentally bad. Right. You're always looking for what's wrong with them and how they're going to take advantage of you, and that they can't do it or they can't be successful. Where when you look from a love-based mindset, the underlying premise is people are fundamentally good, right? They have the ability. And so when you come from a love-based, you look at your teen, and sure, they've made a mistake or few or two in the past, but you still see the potential. It's like they are good. They have the ability to do this.
Yeah.
And it makes it to where you're willing to engage with that potential and try to pull them into that, rather than trying to manage and control, you know, the bad side of them. And the interesting thing is, if I try to control what my teenager's doing, let's just use a simple example. Again, they come home with a bad grade on a test. And so the step is, okay, as a parent, I'm going to micromanage what they're doing. I'm going to make sure they're studying. I'm going to make sure that they have a plan for doing better the next time. And I'm going to be checking their grades all the time. The underlying message that the parent is sending there is that the teen is not capable of doing that on their own.
That's right? Exactly right.
And so that's what you're communicating to them. And so it's disempowering from that standpoint. Whereas if you know, from an empowerment approach, what we do is we turn the problem back to them and they say, oh, you know, that bad grade, that's a problem for you, right? What are you going to do about it? You hand it back to them and then you support them as they try to come up with a plan that's their plan for what are they going to do the next time.
Yeah.
And that's part of developing the ability to be resourceful, right? Because
that's right.
They have to work through and think through, okay, what am I going to do differently next time? So it's, you know, just that whole process and what you're communicating is equally as important as what you're doing. And that goes back to those two journeys, right? There's the outside task, let's get a better grade. But then there's that inside journey of personal development that's happening as well. And we need to give that some attention also.
Yeah. And it's, you said it there, your actions are communicating something as well, right? The embedded, the meta message in there, which is either I trust you or I don't.
Right.
You know, and I think that's really important. The other thing, when we were talking about resourceful, as you were talking about the way you were, like, let's say the bad grade, right? Okay, so this is a problem. How are you going to take care of this? Whatever. Number one, you're not rushing in to solve it.
Right.
You're helping them build that capability. But it reminds me a lot of in coaching. There's a coaching concept that
absolutely,
you know, the client is resourceful. In this case, your teenager is resourceful. And so to use it, I mean, I think that's a brilliant way of applying that. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. You give them the problem back and let them, And really, to be honest, the hard part is they may come up with a plan that as a parent, you think, you know, that's probably not going to work, but you still have to give them the freedom to try it. Right. Mm-hmm. And because there's real power in their development, if they go through, try something and it doesn't work, it's the whole idea of experiential learning. You know, they're gaining insight on, you know, that's much more powerful to them than you just telling them it's not going to work. Right. And so, but the hard part as a parent is letting that happen and being there. And then one of the words I love using with parents too, is you need to let it happen, but you have to be compassionate while you do it. Because sometimes a parent will jump in and say, well, I told you that was not going to work, you know, which is not very helpful. You have to be, but if you can always try to keep compassion in your, which again is a love-based, mm-hmm. you know, approach, is be more compassionate as they go through the struggle that they're going. So.
Absolutely. I love that. And the, you mentioned the struggle. And so many times, I think we don't want someone that we love to have to struggle.
Right.
And yet, if you think about education, when we learn is when there's appropriate levels of struggle. If it goes to the point of overwhelm, then we can't learn anything. But if there's never any struggle, there's really never any learning. And I think as a parent, I mean, I'm not a parent. I'm a parent of three dogs, you know, but I can only imagine like wanting to keep that struggle away.
Right. And it's, you know, seeing your son or daughter experience some pain or suffering, you know, it's hard. But again, mm-hmm. that's, you know, back to that word resiliency. You don't develop resiliency unless you go through a little bit of a struggle along the way, right? Or you experience a little bit of pain. So, and part of resiliency is realizing that I can survive it. I can get through to the other side. And if they never, you know, when I say they, the teenager, the son or the daughter never has an opportunity to go through that, then they don't have that belief in themselves that they can survive a little bit of a tough time. You know, interesting sidebar as we're talking about this. I mentioned my youngest child is now off at college. Her senior year, spring semester, was during the COVID lockdown.
Oh.
And so no prom, no graduation. You know, her first semester of college was COVID impacted. But interestingly, it's a struggle and you hate to see him go through that. But I think that whole group of kids that are at that age have a different kind of resiliency and resourcefulness that some of their peers that are a little bit older, a little bit younger may not have, just because of where she happened to be along her path when it all happened. And so while it's hard as a parent, it's part of her life journey and it helps to shape her as she moves forward. So, you know, it's interesting when you start looking at those kinds of big issues that happen to sometimes to kids.
Yeah. And you're totally right too. Like we don't develop resiliency without the struggle, without the challenge.
Right.
You know, there's a great book and you've probably read it by Malcolm Gladwell, David and Goliath.
I don't know if I have seen that one.
Yeah. Oh, and the subtitle of it is The Advantages of Adversity. Okay. And he talks about it, right? Because that's how, as you get older, you know, hey, I've faced other obstacles. I know I can face this as well.
Right.
I love that. I love it. So I totally get it why you say that's the greatest gift that you can give them. Right.
It is. And it allows them to discover themselves and start to believe and have that self-image that they can accomplish. They can be resourceful. And it also, if you think about it this way too, it models that so that they can do it for other people. Again, we talk about that fundamental belief of, you know, people are fundamentally good. And as you start to teach that, they then take that with them out into the world as well. When they are engaging with in the workforce, when they're in their 20s or whatever, you know, they're going to have that kind of a mindset as they go out into the world.
Yeah. And think what, how much better of a leader that they'll just be. They won't have to be the micromanager because they have that come from already.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference for them.
Yeah, absolutely. So love this. Tell me a little bit about, actually, I'm dying to ask you this question. Why have you focused on teenagers in your work?
You know, that's a great question. And it was just the place to start for me. I feel like there's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of struggle with teenagers with parents right now. And so it just felt like there was a big need there. And it does reach into the preteens. You know, we start talking about 10, 11, 12-year-olds as well. I mean, those are, they're becoming, you know, it's almost like teens is irrelevant now because, you know, the kids seem older and more mature. They're exposed to more.
That's right.
At a younger age.
Way more pressure.
Yeah, a lot more pressure. And then it stretches up, you know, into the early 20s. So it just, you know, there's just a lot going on there in that whole space. And so it felt like a good place to start. I'll be honest, my ultimate goal is to move up and down that those different seasons. It's interesting. I had somebody say, you know, I'd love to have a book on how to be a grandparent, which you never see that out there because, you know, I'm at a point now where I have adult children and I do have grandchildren. And it's the relationship's a little bit different with your adult children than it is when they're in your home. And so I can see, you know, eventually starting to stretch up and provide content for people that are in that stage and then going the other direction as well. And so, you know, back into more of the infant and in grade school years as well. So, but I had to start somewhere. And
that's
so
right.
My initial, and to be quite honest, I'm finding it pretty consuming just to be here, you know, in this area. Although I'll be honest, a lot of the skill set is the same. When you talk about empowering, you can start doing that with a 2, 3, 4-year-old child when you think about it. And part of it is giving them some choice. It's, again, that belief that they can solve their own problem. And sometimes it's as simple as, do you want a red cup or a blue cup? But when you ask that question, you're starting to have that child take some ownership and make decisions. And it grows into then when they have to make a decision about whether to study tonight or not. I mean, it all builds towards that stuff. So, but anyway, back to your question, it just felt like the right place to start because there's a lot of issues. And as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot more risk there, it feels like. And, you know, I think parents struggle with the teen years. They struggle making that transition into parenting a teenager.
They do. It's so funny when you're talking about the red cup versus a blue cup. When I was a kid, we had these, they're the strangest looking things, Jim. They looked like cowboy boots with a handle on it. They were small and one was red and one was blue. And as soon as you said that, I distinctly remember my mom should ask me, which cup do you want today?
Yeah.
You know, and even things like I was very picky about what I wore.
Right.
And mom would say, okay, so what do you want to wear?
Right.
It was never forced on me. Like, you know, this is what you're going to wear today. Now, I mean, obviously I had to wear something that would be presentable, but you know, I got to make those choices. And I think it was great. So,
yeah.
So thanks for bringing back the memory.
Yeah. Inside some limit, you know, when they're young, you have some boundaries around
that's
it,
right.
But you give them a little bit of freedom within that. And again, you're developing those skills to make a decision and to be responsible for themselves. And also if they make a bad choice, well, it's still their choice. And, you know, there may be a little bit of a consequence that comes of that. And so having them be able to work through that consequence, whatever it might be. And the same thing happens with a teenager.
Yeah. And let's face it, the consequences of when you're like 6 or 7 and you wear something bad to school, those consequences, they're probably pretty small in the big scheme of things. So, all right. So your book, I want to make sure we talk about this. So how to be the parent your teenager needs you to be. Tell us a little bit about your book.
Yeah. So really it focuses on three fundamentals. The first one we've talked quite a bit about was, which is the idea of mindset and the parent's mindset and being mindful about or intentional about choosing fear or love versus fear. And so that's one of the fundamentals that I'll work with parents. We've talked a lot about empowerment as well already. And so the idea of shifting and being more empowerment focused with your teen. The area we haven't touched on as much, which is really critical, is the idea of building connection. You know, one of the most common things that happens is that the parent starts to feel disconnected from the teenager. And some of that's natural because the teen is pulling away a little bit. They want to become more independent. They have their own thoughts and feelings. And there is this little bit of a divide that starts to happen between the child and the parent. And so the parent has to be, again, very intentional about rebuilding and sort of repairing that disconnect, if you will. And the whole idea of how do I build connection with my teenager is sort of the third fundamental that I like to work with parents. And actually, it's a prerequisite to empowerment. Think about it this way. I can't influence or empower somebody unless I have a really strong connection with them, or you might say trust with them. And so a lot of times a parent will have an issue with their teen and they'll want to skip the step of rebuilding the connection. But you got to do that first, and you got to build that connection first and reestablish it. And then you can step into the role of empowerment or influence at that point. So I have a lot of strategies and work. And actually, to be quite honest, a lot of times it's the old 80-20 rule. 80% of the issues parents experience with their teenagers, I feel like a lot of times can be resolved just by building connection, nothing else. And it's and part of it's because that teen starts to feel isolated. You know, it's a double-edged sword. They want to pull away, but when they pull away and feel isolated, that's a very scary place for that teenager to be, right? They become very anxious. You talk about anxiety, and they start to feel alone or isolated, and it's a tough place for them to be. And the whole idea of that parent being able to build that connection and have home, you know, the home feel like a safe place for the teenager is so powerful for that teen and gives them resiliency when they go out into the world. They sort of, they take that safety with them, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so that whole process of building connection is just critical. And sometimes it feels like the teen doesn't want it, but trust me, they do. They want it, even though they may resist, but underneath it all, they really do. They want that connection.
That's right. And when you were talking there about the rebuilding the connection, because that precedes empowering and influence, that goes back to like what I used to teach in leadership classes, right? You have to have connection in order to be able to lead.
Right.
You know, otherwise it's force. Otherwise it's coercion.
Right. Exactly. It's control.
It's control, which of course is an illusion. All right. So with connection, one of the things I remember, oh my goodness, this was years ago. I had a client and, great guy. He had teenagers and he would always talk about the questions he'd ask around the dinner table. Because he said, like, if you say to your teenager, how was your day? You're going to get a one word answer.
Right.
You know, and I know you have some resources around this as well. So how does a parent effectively engage with their teenager? Like, are there questions they should ask, questions they should never ask? Tell us more about that.
Which actually, that's the resource that I have for the listeners. It just is around that. I have 10 questions you should never ask your teenager. They're conversation killers, and then 10 great questions. So it's in this area. But fundamentally, and actually one of the strategies I have for building connection that I recommend to parents is just the whole idea of being curious. You know, it's curiosity. It's asking questions about what the teenager's thinking, what their opinions are. You know, they like a certain kind of music. You know, what do you like about that kind of music? And they're open-ended questions, you know, the what's and the how's and that sort of thing. And so it's not what grade did you get on the test, but what was the test fair, or how was the test fair or not fair? You know, that sort of a thing. So it allows them to express a little bit of their opinion and their sort of values, if you will, or their beliefs. And so that's an important part of it, is asking those questions from a curiosity standpoint. And the struggle, and like a lot of times with a teen, they'll be going through a difficult time. Let's say a teenage daughter comes home and she's having issues with her friends. You know, we want to jump in and solve that problem, where it's more of a, be curious, you know, what's going on? You let them just tell you, and then you just listen. The other one of my strategies for building connection is to just be present and not be distracted by your phone or the computer or anything else, and be present and not sharing your solutions. It's just listening. And you talk about even adult relationships, we want to be heard, right? You want to be able to say something and be able to feel like we're being heard and not judged on the flip side of that. And so just the idea of being curious and being present, those two things right there can go a long way towards building that connection with the teenager, because it allows them to feel like they've been heard, and it builds the relationship as a result of that.
Yeah. There's so much there. The curiosity, because the other part about curiosity is that we cannot be curious and judgmental at the same time.
Yeah.
And people can feel that, you know, they can completely feel it. I mean, even as an adult, if you feel judged, you shut down. Like, right, I'm done.
Because, and part of it is you don't want to put yourself out there to be judged more, right?
That's exactly right.
There's a risk associated with that. And if you think about judgment is fear-based, you know, part of why I am judging you is because I want to make myself look good. I want to know that I'm right, you know, all that kind of stuff, which is, it's a fearful thing from my end, right?
And yeah.
If I can be love-centered, I don't have to judge. I don't, you know, I'm comfortable with where I'm at. I can just be curious and engage from that curious mindset.
Yeah. I can, when you were talking there too, I could also imagine some parents thinking, well, how do your actions reflect on me?
Right. Exactly. And that happens with parents. They feel like, you know, the success of their child is a reflection of their parenting.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to get past, where you got to, you know, it's all for the benefit of the child. You have to be able to be more love-centered and sort of let go of that a little bit. And
yeah.
Every child is different. That's part of why it's a journey. And, you know, they are all different. They have different personalities. There are different birth orders, mm-hmm. you know, and different in their life experience. As I mentioned, my youngest, part of her life experience was COVID her senior year in high school. You know, my oldest one did not have that happen. And so it's a different life experience. And so we have to be just there from, again, that love-based mindset. So we always respond with love and try to do what's appropriate for them in that moment.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge. And sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. So that's where, again, you have to be forgiving to yourself. Mm-hmm. One of my wife's favorite phrases is give yourself grace, right? Give yourself
yep.
a little grace. And then, and the beautiful thing is that when you come, you can always heal the relationship, right? So if you do something as a parent that creates a little damage to that connection or that relationship, the next time around, you can respond with love and it always heals. You can always heal. And I remember telling people, because I deal sometimes with parents who have issues with their parents, right?
Oh,
and so
yeah.
they're adults and they have issues with their parents. And my message is, you can heal that relationship. I don't care how old you are, right? It can be healed. And not only can it be healed, it should be healed. Mm-hmm. And because you don't need that struggle and that breakdown in your life. I mean, that's part of your pain and suffering. So if you go and heal that relationship, you're going to experience more peace, joy, and happiness going forward.
Yeah. And then that makes it easier for you to give that to other people as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was talking to someone one time and she was talking about how you can even heal a relationship like as an adult. Let's say that you had a bad relationship with your mom or whatever, that you can, and she has passed on, you can still heal that relationship because it's the inner work that you do.
Absolutely. Which actually, I don't know, one of the authors I like to read is, and he's passed now, is Dr. Wayne Dyer. I don't know
yeah.
if you're familiar. Yeah. And I don't know if you have ever read part of his story is, you know, he was an orphan, was in an orphanage, but his biological father was an alcoholic and he had always carried a lot of resentment and anger towards his father. And in one of, I can't remember which book, but in one of his books, he talks about how he went, his father had passed away and he had heard that he had passed. And so he went to the gravesite, basically and he said it was like a complete shifting point in his life because he went there to forgive him, basically to heal
wow.
that relationship. And when he did that, all of that negative energy was allowed to leave him, which then put him in a much better place to move forward and do what he did then for the rest of his life. So it's
yeah.
true. You can always heal.
Yeah, that's really powerful. That's really powerful. I love how much of this is coming back from that. Where are you coming from? A place of love or a place of fear?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's
wow.
where it all starts. And that's, mm-hmm. and part of what I would throw out is that's one of the biggest gifts you can give your children is that perspective. So that mm-hmm. when they go out, they take with them the love-based mindset or the awareness of the difference and the ability to shift. Let me give you a simple story that happened actually with one of our kids that explains how you can combine the outside journey and the inside. Remember my Heroes 2 journeys?
Yeah.
So one of our daughters came home from high school one day and started complaining that she had the worst teacher ever, right? I mean, that happens. That you can't get through high school without one of your kids the worst teacher ever. And so there was two pieces to the message. One was, okay, how are we going to be resourceful and still be able to get the goal, the grade that you want in this class, even though maybe the teacher is not connecting with you and what have you. But then the second message, And we literally had this conversation with her, went back to people get into teaching because they're passionate about teaching and helping other people. They're fundamentally good, right? And so if that teacher is struggling and they're not being passionate in the classroom, there must be something's going on with them. And we don't know. Maybe they're going through a divorce. Maybe they have a sick parent. Maybe who knows what's going on for them. Part of our response should be some compassion, right? How can we be compassionate for them? And then, and we literally said to our daughter, you know, what could you do to make a difference for them? You know, how could you, maybe it's just a smile in the morning and a good morning to them when you walk into the room, or can you have some compassion and how can you have an impact? And think the message to the teenager is you can make a difference, right? Mm-hmm. And again, if you give that message to your teenager, when they go out into the world, they're always going to have that in the background. You know, I can have an impact here. I can make a difference with what's going on. So it's, you know, there's, again, it's the hero's two journeys. We had, you know, she wanted to get the grade. That's one piece. But then there's this inside, there's this opportunity for internal transformation and growth. If we look at that second journey of, you know, what are the principles, values, and beliefs that you're coming from?
Yeah. And what a phenomenal experience for her. You know, that might have been better. I don't know what this teacher, I don't know the class she was teaching, but the lesson that your daughter learned by doing that might surpass any lesson that she would have learned that year in class. You know what I mean?
Right. And if you think about it, the part of the perspective shift is that quote unquote bad teacher was a gift.
Was a gift.
It was a gift. And and if you start looking from a love-based perspective, everything that happens, it's a gift. There's an opportunity there. There's something to be grateful for. There's a lesson to be learned. It's a chance to grow and learn. And so, but that starts with your mindset and where you're coming from.
Completely, it does. Yeah. So I'm totally curious, the love mindset coming from that, was that always easy for you? I mean, was this something that you learned as a child?
It's always an effort. I think I was aware and I still fight it.
Really?
We all do. It never goes away, right? I mean, there's always circumstances that pop up. Actually, I just wrote something in one of my blog posts the other day. We went to a Christmas show and we're doing this right after the first of the year. And the theater we went to, we had purchased the valet parking package and we started to pull up and you can just picture this. The poor valet guys were just overwhelmed. There were 500 cars there and it took us 20 minutes to go 50 yards. Right.
Yeah.
And part of what I wrote was my first response was frustration. Right. I started to feel that frustration come up.
Yeah.
But the difference, you know, where I'm at now is I notice it. Oh, I'm getting frustrated. Then it's like create that little bit of a pause and shift. And again, part of it was having some compassion for these guys. I mean, they were working at it. They were trying.
Yeah, they're probably short-staffed.
Exactly. And the interesting thing with that is, you know, if I would have stayed fear-based, I would have experienced frustration. That would have been my experience for the 20 minutes we sat there. Whereas when you can make that shift, then you start to experience compassion. It just feels different. You experience more peace than it was more peace of mind. But the point is, it happens to all of us. It's not that it ever goes away completely. Actually, another Wayne Dyer story real quick. He was talking about, the story was there was a saint or a holy person was speaking to a crowd. And one of the people from the crowd said, you know, you're so loving and so giving. Do you have access to a certain kind of love that we just aren't aware of? Is there something different about the love that you know? And the holy man said, no, I have the exact same love inside of me that you do. The difference between me and you is I don't have anything else. And so it's this idea that we have both of these things in us. It's just where are we coming from? And it's always going to be a struggle. It's always there. It's just a matter of being intentional and trying to, you know, create that shift a little bit.
Yeah. The awareness and the choice.
Right. And there's a choice. That's the beauty. You know, there's a choice.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you for sharing that story too. This has been great. I want to respect your time too. I just happened to notice because I got caught up in the conversation, which is awesome. So tell us a little bit more. How can people find you? How can they find that free resource? Those types of things.
Yeah, sure. So again, it's Family Enrichment Academy. And so it's familyenrichmentacademy.com. Pretty straightforward. You can go there. And actually right there on the front page, the first thing you're going to see is the resource for the 10 questions you should never ask your teenager. And then the 10 great questions. Again, you put your email in there and you can download that resource. So That's the best way to catch me. The book is available on Amazon. I also have a link on the website, but if you go to Amazon, again, the title of the book is How to Be the Parent Your Teenager Needs You to Be, and it's available there as well. So love to connect with people, have them connect with our community. And, you know, like I said, I always just, it's just an honor to be able to serve people as they move along this journey. And it's all about being able to help and serve.
Yeah. And what you're doing, Jim, I mean, it's so important, right? Because this is our next generation coming up. And I don't know if there's a more important relationship than between a parent and their kids, you know,
absolutely,
as this journey. So thank you so much for what you do.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation and that you took a lot out of it. I had six takeaways. The first one, how a parenting style either builds resourcefulness or it builds dependency. I couldn't help but think about how this is the same with how we lead or manage our teams. Insight number two, a fear-based mindset comes from the space that people are fundamentally bad versus a love-based mindset, which is where people are fundamentally good. Number three, when we operate from a fear-based mindset and we try to control things, that leads us to micromanage, which is ultimately disempowering because it sends the message, you are not capable and I don't trust you. This one was specifically the one that I wish some of my former managers had heard, because that's frustrating for people. Insight number four, appropriate levels of struggle lead us to not just learning, but greater levels of resiliency. Insight number five, being curious is one way to build a connection. And I would say that being curious is a very, very powerful way to build connection. And finally, insight number six, we cannot build a connection unless we are truly, truly present. I have known so many people, so many managers over the years who have proudly told me that they are really great multitaskers. But then what their team members tell me is that they don't feel heard. So I think that that is a really important takeaway from this conversation, whether we're leading teams, managing teams, leading a family, we have to be present. And that means we have to shut down the distractions and really be there with the person that we're talking to. So that wraps up this episode. Thanks so much for tuning in and for listening. I so appreciate all of you. I hope that, even though the year is young, I hope that this year is shaping up to be just a wonderful year for you. And if it isn't, don't despair. You can turn it around. You are resourceful beyond what you even know. Keep going, keep growing, and find a way to thrive no matter what.